Come along, children. Now we're going to have a little music.
Yo, what is up, guys? Welcome back to First Cut. This is our very special top 10 movies of 2023. We're finally doing it. It's been a while, but we're going to do it. Always late. Better late than never. I'm here with RB3 and Sabrina. First thing I want to get to, obviously, guys, is this year, 2023 in film. Obviously, we're in 2024 now. But looking back at 2023, what are your guys' thoughts on how this year stacked up in movies?
Honestly, looking back at this past year, I know we've kind of talked about it with our Oscar nominations, but I think it's been an incredible year for film. I think studios took a lot of big swings, you know, with Oppenheimer, with Barbie. Some of these films had such a crazy cultural impact and huge return. Like, people are still going to the theater to see Oppenheimer. People are still going to see Barbie. I see screenings all the time. I see people talking about it on social media. So it's been really exciting because I feel like this is the most excitement we've seen kind of chatter-wise since pre-pandemic. So it kind of feels like we're back.
Yeah, nah, same. I think this honestly been a phenomenal year. Like you were alluding to, Sabrina, all the good movies got pushed into 2023. So I feel like we just had an onslaught of nonstop hits after hits, especially during the summer, which is usually full of like dumb blockbusters. But even the dumb blockbusters were like slightly better than usual, you know, particularly like TMNT and a lot of other ones. So I really do think this was a really, really fun year. I had a hard time making this list. I mean, there's a hard time. I'm staring down at my list right now, and I'm thinking about switching out something for something else. Like at this exact second, I'm kind of nervous, you know, so.
Yeah, there was a lot of movies that came out in 2023. First thing I want to say, I said it last year, I'm going to say it again, but this time I mean it. 2020 year was a wild year for me personally. I didn't get to see a lot of movies that I've been looking forward to see. So my list is a little bit thinner than what I would have wanted. Eventually, I will get to the movies that a lot of people have on their list. Unfortunately, due to circumstances, I wasn't able to. But the way we're going to do it, guys, is we're going to go 10 through 6. Each one of us do our 10 through 6, talk about it, then go 5 through 2, talk about it, and then go to our honorable mentions and eventually hit our number one movie. We'll start always with you, Sabrina. What are your 10 through 6 movies of 2023?
My 10 through 6, sorry, editing this out. So we are just going to list them. I'm not going to speak on each one as I go.
Okay. Yeah.
Perfect. Make sure you edit this out, RB3.
And I mean, that's good. And then we could do, I mean, we could probably do like a little like sentence or something, you know what I mean? But yeah, like, or you could probably sum it up at the end too, maybe, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good. I'll list each one and just do a small little thing before a big chatter. Okay, perfect. And then marking this, so you know, get this out of here. my top 10, getting into number 10, Anatomy of a Fall. Honestly, crazy low on my list. It is a fantastic film. It's absolutely engrossing. The direction from Justine Triet is very deserving of her Oscar nomination. Top tier performances. It's long, but it breezes by. And I'm a sucker for a film that ends with kind of like some ambiguity. I love to have it sit with me and stay with me for a second. So it's my number 10. My number 9 is Sanctuary. This is an erotic thriller love story with like a dom and a sub romance. Definitely very interesting. It hinges on Margaret Qualley's and Christopher Abbott's performances 100%. It's also, it doesn't really have any sets. It's really just like a hotel room. And so I think with the dialogue and their presence, their performances, it really, really elevates a film like this. And then my number 8 would be Rye Lane. Directed by Rain Alan Miller, starring David Johnson and Vivian O'Hara. This is the best rom-com since Crazy Rich Asians. It is smart. It's funny. It's sweet. The leads and their characters are so relatable. It's kind of like a Fleabag type of vibe where they're not necessarily the best people. Like, they're very flawed. But at the same time, they kind of learn to like work through those. And something I really, really admired about this film is that it made the setting, which was London, feel very familiar. If you're looking in the background There's a lot of moments of children doing like TikTok dances or filming that. There's food vendors. There's just so much character in the background, families walking around in color and in scope. It is just so vibrant and lively. So very comforting and sweet. And then my number seven is All of Us Strangers. And between this and After Sun, let Paul Mescal have a break. Let's see a happy role from him. I'm excited to see Gladiator. But you know, when he starts dancing, it's about to get real sad. But it's a very touching story on grief, loneliness. It's simple, but at the same time, very cerebral, which I was not expecting at all. I think it's a realistic and heartbreaking way of navigating being queer. And it's very earth-shatteringly sad. But Andrew Scott was absolutely phenomenal. And this was written and directed by Andrew Hay. And he adapted this from a novel, but completely made it his own. So I really, really admire that about it. And I think that's my six
Number
through 10.
six. You
Oh,
forgot six.
I should have numbered these. Ironclaw is my number six. We have spoken about Ironclaw to death already in our review. I love it so much. Fantastic screenplay, a top-tier ensemble. And to go through so much tragedy but end on a hopeful note, I think really resonates with a lot of people. So this is one that is going to stick with me.
All right. RB3, give us your 10 through six.
Yeah, man, I'm just here. This is gonna be tough. All right, so this one, this is these last five are coming in kind of fresh. I'm also gonna be putting out a top 10 list with my buddy John Marin at Real Ones. We talked briefly about our top 10 list on there, but I recorded that first and I had a different list, and I'm changing my mind after I'm thinking about it. So my number 10, just like Sabrina's Anatomy of a Fall, Justine Triet's film was just amazingly precise. Attention to detail was off the chart, and Sandra Hoer's performance was next level. It was quiet, it's meticulous, but it's everything that you want to see in a good movie, so it was great. Number nine, this is a new audition for me as The Boy and the Heron, The Boy and Heron, The Boy and Heron, by Hiro Miyazaki. Man, this was one of my favorite movies of the year, and it's truly. I saw it twice. The first time I saw it, I thought I got it, and I did get a lot of it. And then I saw it a second time, and it really stuck even harder for me for the themes that it was going for, the message that I was trying to tell. It's a beautiful movie, beautiful movie. And Robert Pattinson as all the voice actors in the new one, Florence Pugh in the dub version, the English dub were fantastic. Number eight, The Holdovers. This is an amazingly sweet, kind, gentle film that is funny, but also just tender-hearted and nice. I probably had this a little higher earlier in the year and previously, but you know, I think there are some things about it that I don't love as much. But everything that I love about it, I really, really do love about it. The performances were phenomenal. Number seven is 1001 from A.V. Rockwell, starring Teyana Taylor. This movie was an engrossing piece of cinema, just through and through. Teyana Taylor's performance was next level, and it builds up to a point and momentum that, and a twist that you just did not see coming. And it's a really great movie overall. And it's a great story about family and going through struggles together. It's great. It's great. My number six is Barbie. Yeah, I love Barbie. Still love Barbie to this day. I can't get enough of Barbie. I've watched this movie like twice in theaters and saw it like three or four times on streaming, and I can't get enough of it. I just think it's a phenomenal piece of blockbuster cinema. It's as perfect as you could get a Barbie movie to be. So that's my 6 through 10.
All right. Finally, we get to me. I'm gonna be honest. I'm always honest. So just because it's not the usual movies you see in top 10s doesn't mean it's any less. My top 10, 10 through 6, starting at number 10, I had to do it. It's Godzilla Minus One. This movie is emotionally impactful. It has everything you could want in a Godzilla movie, from the spectacle to the emotion from the human characters, to a comeback story, everything you could possibly want. inside a film. It's a full four-quadrant movie, which is good for the entire family, which is a very interesting thing you could say about these kind of movies, but that's definitely the case with this one. So shout out to Godzilla Minus One. At number nine is another one I had to do it. Every year, every time these movies have come out, I've put it in my top 10. It's Creed 3. I have Creed 3, Michael B. Jordan's directorial debut.
Yeah,
I love the Creed movies. I think they're all special in their own way. This is definitely the most unique one of them all. Again, talking about anime, it's very anime, just like Godzilla Minus One. Extremely anime based and anime centered as far as the framing, the structure, the story style, the two guys going head to head. It's really, really cool and really interesting, and it's different from what we've seen before inside a boxing movie. So that's why it's my number nine. And number eight, I have Oppenheimer, Christopher Nolan's film. This is a massive movie, a beautiful movie, from the score to the performances, to the theme of the film that I feel like a lot of people kind of forgot about and kind of slept on a little bit, where the theme is very much in your face about the repercussions of what this kind of evil can bring into the world and what evil looks like in different manners, where you can kind of justify what evil is in a very interesting and unique way. So shout out Christopher Nolan for this one. And then at number seven, speaking of anime, I have Suzume, Makoto Shinkai's film from back in April or May, I believe it came out. I got a chance to see this one early and I really loved it. Obviously, a lot of people will always hold this director up to his best, which is Your Name. And Your Name will always be considered to be one of the best anime movies, if not movies of all time. But I feel like this one, just because it didn't live up to that hype, doesn't mean it's not good in its own way. So I feel like Suzume deserves to be there. At number six, I had to do it again. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Hey.
This is a movie, again, 2014, sitting down in a movie theater to see the first one really impacted me in a profound way. A month later, I moved to LA. So again, I have a really deep connection to this movie and just the love of film and the love of what you can accomplish inside a movie theater when it comes to found family and emotions and a character journey and a character arc. So shout out to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Those are my 10 through 6. What are you guys feeling right now?
These are interesting. We got a good mix. I'm honestly surprised both RB3 and I have Anatomy of a Fall so low.
Me too. Yeah.
Because I'm assuming you haven't seen it, Andres.
I haven't.
I think that's one that objectively I know is top three easily. Like, there's no doubt. But because of my own, like, the way other films have kind of like touched me throughout this past year and stuck with me, even though Anatomy of Fall has done the same and those performances are insane, her son in the film, like the performance he gives, that's probably the best child performance I have seen. Even the dog.
I was gonna say best dog performance I've ever seen. Like,
yo,
honestly,
y'all. I heard about a dog in a movie, man. You know.
Yeah, no, it's not a dog friendly film right here. I feel the exact same way, Sabrina. Like, it's objectively pretty much perfect movie, but it's like, I think it's designed with this in its intent, but it's very like inhuman. Like, it's very like kind of almost making you not want to root for her or not want to root for this situation. So it's like, it's a little tougher to like grasp onto, and the rewatch value, you know, it's tough. But like, not to say it's not a great film, but it's just hard to exhort the same way, you know?
The way that I feel the exact opposite of you, oh. I root for her.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the best part about a film that's ambiguous like this one. And of course, we're not going to spoil it. Andreas hasn't seen it. Probably a lot of people haven't, because I think between Anatomy of a Fall and Zone of Interest, which I still haven't seen, it's kind of really hard to catch these movies in a theater. So unless they're really accessible and streaming, a lot of people probably aren't going to be able to see them for a second. But yeah, I think overall, these are really fun. Guardians, I just watched it for the first time this past weekend because I was like, no superhero films in 2023. The only one I watched was Blue Beetle that I really enjoyed. Other than that, I didn't watch a single one. So,
yeah. What'd you think of it?
Oh, I really liked it. I I didn't know I was gonna cry over a CGI raccoon.
Yes.
Not to bring this maestro like slander in here, but I think this was Bradley Cooper's best performance of 2023.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that was absolutely fantastic what they did with that character. And yeah, great kind of way to end this trilogy that I think is probably the most consistent in Marvel history, in
Oh
my
yeah.
opinion, at least. Yeah.
Yeah, RB3, you and I talked about Guardians 3 and we both loved it and enjoyed it. Yeah, who knew? Who knew that the movie that I cried the most in a movie in 2023 was going to be Guardians. Guardians of the Galaxy. I swear, I think I'm not even kidding it when I say this, and again, this might be TMI, but whatever. I think this is the movie I've cried the most ever, like out of any movie. In any, like in history, like even when I was a kid, I was looking back, like, I don't think I've ever cried this hard in a movie theater in a minute, like in a minute. And I was sobbing like a baby. Bro, I'm such an animal lover. I talked to you about it, RB3. Anything that has anything with animals in it, like, I'm gonna cry, bro. I'm gonna cry. I'm gonna cry. It just killed me. This movie just absolutely shredded me. Just
Yeah.
beautiful, beautiful movie.
It really is.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was personally really sad that I didn't like it. I'm a mentioning like some other like honorable mentions, later on down the line. Unfortunately, it didn't make my top 10, but it was like right there. Like it was right. That was one of those movies I was right on the edge, and I really was like you, Andres. I was really moved by it. Like I was, and like you, Sabrina. Like for CGI raccoon, like really, like how'd they get that out of me? But it was really beautifully done. And I'm not gonna lie, and I said this during our review, but the IMAX 3D for this movie, like this movie had no excuse to have such good 3D. But there's mad sequences in there that had amazing 3D, and nobody really talked about it. But they're like floating in space, they're doing all this, and you like it's like in you, but it's like also like classfully done too. I don't know. I was like, yo, this is good. This is James Gunn. You did that.
Two movies that I want to talk to you guys about. All of Us Strangers is one, and then 1001 for you, RB3. I'll start with you, Sabrina. All of Us Strangers. Talk to me a little bit about what impacted you the most in this movie.
Honestly, going into it not knowing really anything about it, I just knew that there was a queer aspect to the film between Paul Mescal and Andrew Scott. But the way it showcases grief and loneliness, especially as an adult, when there's a lot of strings that are really like left, and you're kind of picking up these pieces and trying to figure out how do you move forward from this. And it's really about opening up old wounds and trying your best to heal them and doing whatever you can to do so. It's supernatural. It depends on how you interpret it. There's supernatural or some other elements to this. And it actually is pretty crazy because when I first looked it up, and I haven't read the book, but there is like a 1980 something Japanese horror film based off of the same book. So that's kind of what I was talking about, where this writer director, he took this story and really made it his own. It's very unique because I would not call it a horror movie by any means. And yeah, that's really what stuck with me is how they deal with all of this and how they also show it's moving forward with that and accepting it and making peace within yourself, even in the midst of tragedy, which again is another reason why I love Ironclaw. So,
RB3, talk to me a little bit about 1001.
yeah, 1001 is a beautiful movie. I mean, it's about Teyana Taylor is the main star of it. She plays, I believe her name is Enzi, and she basically. Her son Terry is in like foster care. She kind of breaks him out of foster care so she can kind of raise her herself. And it's just like their struggle of like growing up in this like tiny New York apartment, like where, again, this like starting in the 90s. And then, obviously in recent New York times, things are like being gentrified, like the community's changing around them. Things are getting a lot different. And then also watching this young man who's played by two different actors. When he's like younger, and then when he eventually becomes old, I think actually three different actors. But the guy who plays the last version of the son, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he has a monologue towards the end of the film. Oh, sorry, the actor's name is Joshua Cross. He has a monologue at the end of the film that is like, will just pull at your heartstrings like all across the board. Like it is crazy how good he just plays the son who's affected by his mom. And again, there's a whole thing, there's a whole underlying element to the thing that I don't want to spoil, but it just when you get to the heart of it, it's like really impactful. It by the end of it, you're like on the edge of your seat. So I really, really enjoyed that one.
And that's on Amazon Prime, right?
I think it's on Amazon Prime. I saw it on Peacock. I mean, I think it first came on Peacock, and I think now it's on Amazon Prime. Yeah, so it's from Focus Features. And then, yeah, the director, A.V. Rockwell, I think this is her first, like, feature film, like, debut. So just for a feature film debut to kind of come out swinging like this is really, really impressive.
Sabrina, is All of Us Strangers, is that on streaming anywhere or is that in theaters?
Oh, I do want to say really quickly, we talked about how hard it is to like access some of these movies. I had to drive to Century City twice just to see this movie, and that's basically like a little mini LA road trip for me, from like the East Side. So I don't think it's on streaming yet. I think it was recently released like in the UK, so maybe it's easier to find a theater that's playing it if you're over there. Hopefully it comes on soon, because I feel like that's some of the reason why it was shut out of the Oscars for the most part. It definitely got a lot of BAFTA nominations, but I think nobody really saw it, which is really unfortunate because it is a phenomenal film.
Any other movies that you really want to highlight before we get to our top five?
Honestly, Rye Lane, I have either of you.
I
Yeah,
haven't.
no, that's a really good one. Yeah.
Yeah, it was giving me like modern, way funnier, way less pretentious Before Sunrise, really using that element. Following two people throughout this like romantic journey. Yeah, super, super comforting, super sweet, and definitely gonna look into what like Rain Alan Miller does next after this one.
Is that on Hulu? Is that I'm okay, it is. Okay.
Yeah, that was a Searchlight film, so that one's on Hulu.
RB3,
Yeah,
any
that's
final
really
movie you want to give a shout out to?
Nah, other than the Boy and the Heron, I'm hoping it might be on your list later on, Dress, but we'll see.
We'll see. Let's get to our top five movies of the year. We're gonna go five through two. So Sabrina, give me your top five movies of 2023.
This was so difficult. I feel like even everything from nine through one, they really could move in at any time, any day. But my number five, so I just want to preface that. But my number five is Barbie. I think, again, it's really cool that we have a major studio film with a woman director starring mostly women that took a really basic IP, something that could have dragged, could have not resonated at all, and made it into something really fun, refreshing, super heartfelt. I've seen a lot of criticism on Twitter, of course, about the monologues, especially right now with America Ferrera getting her nomination. But I don't agree with the idea that it's like on the criticism that it's feminism for children, because I kind of think that that was the point. I think Barbie is a film that's accessible for everyone. Again, this is a movie about a doll, so I feel like a lot of kids are going to go out and see this. It can start conversations. An 11-year-old can watch this and glaringly notice like what is right and what is wrong, whether it's what the Barbies are doing wrong or what the Kens are doing wrong, and come out of this film with a brand new perspective, maybe on themselves, the world around them. It's like lessons you can take with you throughout your life. And we've seen Greta do monologues in Little Bird and Lady Women, and those were very, very impactful. So this whole like diet feminism criticism, I think, doesn't necessarily work, because this is something very simple, accessible, and especially in the era of the Andrew Tates, the horse patriarchy people, the alpha males, it's kind of dominated the minds of a lot of young men. Actually, right now, there's this huge ideological divide between young men and women all over the world. They kind of broke it down. I think it was like Financial Insider. I'll drop the link in the comments just for the source, but they broke it down by country and just kind of overall in the world. Right now, there's the biggest divide. And I think a film that is so popular, made such a cultural impact, can really hopefully start conversations. Hopefully, parents can talk to their kids about being nicer to people and not putting just your needs, your thoughts, or whatever above everybody else's, and really cultivating a community So I feel like maybe the pandemic kind of made some of us feel isolated, made some of us look into sources like this to create our own communities when we should be appreciating the people around us and celebrating that. So yeah, Barbie's my number five and I loved it. My number four is Bottoms, the funniest movie of the year, bar none. Io was absolutely phenomenal this past year in so many different works. I think she showed off her range so beautifully, especially in a film like this. It has the most absurd dialogue, the most absurd plot points, and every single performance in this film was like firing. Marshawn Lynch, I had never heard of him because I'm not a sports girly. So I thought he was straight up an actor. And then when I found out he wasn't, I was absolutely shocked. His comedic timing was insane. The ad-libs were unreal. I think the screenplay is airtight. I think there is every detail is so meticulous in this film to be funny. Like every single rewatch, you're gonna find something in the background to talk about. It's fresh, fun, dynamic. And I'm really excited because an Emma Seligman film was in my top 10 of 2021, and that was Shiva Baby. So now both of her films that she's released have been on my top 10s. I just realized that. So shout out to her. And then my number three is Past Lives. And honestly, I can't even think about this movie for too long without getting extremely emotional. I think when it comes to friendships, romantic relationships, family, it's a lot of that what could have been, or maybe in another life. Those stories always get to me. And I think the three leads in this film were absolutely fantastic. Celine Song direction and screenplay was so amazing. And it's so subdued, it's so simple. You are just following these people through various points of their lives. The Eternal Sunshine mention halfway through the movie or like towards the start. Definitely made for me. So I really, really appreciate this one. And then my number two, finally, is Poor Things by Yorgos Lanthimos. I think it really focuses on the liberation of women. I think Bella is taking control over her own body, the world, her mind. She's experiencing the human condition completely unblemished for the first time. And she was created by men. She was attempted to be controlled by men, like Mark Ruffalo's character in the film, but she creates agency for herself to come and go as she pleases, to do whatever she wants. She doesn't listen to a single person. And experiencing the world with all of these aspects and just like full pleasure, whether it's traveling, food, romantic relationships, anything like that. I think the way Yorgos portrayed all of this as a woman coming into her own was really, really beautiful. And the production design was incredible. It's so dreamy. It's very fairy tale like almost. So to me, Bella Baxter is like a modern fairy tale princess. I absolutely adored this film.
All
Yeah.
right.
Poor Things
RB
did come out
three.
through the Disney Corporation. So she is technically a Disney princess.
There we
Yeah,
go.
there you go.
Right.
Your five through two, RB three.
Yeah, my five through two. Very, very similar to you, Sabrina. My number five is Past Lives. I love this film all through and through. Celine Song did the thing. And I think it's, even going deeper than the romantic angle of it, it's kind of like that longing for your connection to home, or to your homeland. Like how she lived in Korea for the first, was like 9 or 10 years of her life, readjusting to American culture and American lifestyle, and frankly, a very American kind of career, being a playwright, then a screenwriter. I mean, obviously they have screenwriters and stuff in Korea too, but it's a very, she's definitely shooting for the Hollywood kind of, it's very, yeah, it very feels, it's like, she's getting more accustomed to the American lifestyle, American culture, even, down to marrying her husband. And it's just, yes, but then having that reminder of home and having that reminder of like, and having that choice directly in front of her. Do you continue going with the safe, comfortable, like life that you built here at home, or do you want to go for what your heart truly lies, in Korea? So it's like it's a very South Korea. It's a very interesting movie. It just makes you very thought-provoking, and I loved every second of it. And that last long take at the end when it's just the waiting for the taxi is just heart-wrenching. I say heart-wrenching a lot. I gotta think of a better word or a more creative word, but that the heart-wrenching heart sinking, I should say. My heart was at the on the floor watching that sequence. So that's my number five right there. Number four is Across the Spider-Verse, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. This was my number one for the longest time of the year. The phenomenal piece of animation, everything that they were doing, playing with the form of animation across the watercolor painting, color textures that they had to invent new technology to create, to the obviously the very colorful world of Miles Morales, but also getting to that heart and that family relationship that Miles had with his mother and his father and all those things. So it really it was getting deep. And then obviously speaking to the whole message of anybody can wear the mask, anybody can be a superhero, anybody can live up to their fullest potential, I think is a message that kids and honestly a lot of adults need to hear too. So it's a great Marvel, my favorite Marvel film of the year, and honestly, I think it deserved. It only got nominated for Best Animated Feature at the Oscars. I personally think it should have been up there with Best Picture, Best Original Song, Best Visual Effects, Best Sound. Should have been up there for all of it because it was phenomenal. But anyway, my number three is Poor Things. Very similar to you, Sabrina. I love this movie through and through. Yorgos Lanthimos just put so much style and flair and made it so weird. Like, I love movies that are just weird and unafraid to be weird. From the crazy zoom-in shots to, seeing William Dafoe burp out like a nasty green, like burp and yeah, burp bubble. And then the Bella's character development was really the thing that like really stuck out for me though, because in the beginning, yeah, it is funny. It is like you're kind of watching like this, baby in an adult body, but seeing her not only develop into a woman, but a very articulate woman. Like, she's very smart. Like, she's outsmarting pretty much everybody in the room. I don't know. It's just such a it's a real journey. It's like the modern day Odyssey, in my opinion. And I just think it's, yeah, I love every second of it. My man Gerard Carmichael had some of the funniest parts in the movie. His over skepticism and like overt like negativity was just some of the funniest moments in the film. And it kind of pushes Bella to a different edge as a character too. So, and obviously Mark Ruffalo as well. I mean, he transformed. You don't really see Mark Ruffalo act the way he acts in this film. So that's Emma Stone. If Emma Stone, if Lily Gladstone was not nominated this year for Killers of the Flower Moon, this would have easily been Emma Stone's award to lose. This would have easily been hers. But Lily Gladstone's there, which is also good. But yeah, Emma Stone was phenomenal in this film. And then my number two film of the year, Opie. Yo, somebody call Opie. It's Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer, Christopher Nolan did it. He put his foot in this movie deep all the way in it. It's one of the biggest spectacle films you've ever seen, which is crazy for a movie that is a biopic, a 3-hour biopic about a guy, a scientist. But yeah, he somehow, some way finds a way to build the spectacle around it, build the suspense around it. It's even spectacle, not even in terms of big, explosions or action set pieces, but just through montage, through music, just the way every piece of it kind of interweaves with each other. Like, I think about that scene when Kenneth Branagh is like, Oppenheimer, can you hear the music? Can you hear the music? And then it cues to the most beautiful score from Ludwig Göransson you'll ever hear. It's just like, yo, this, it's like the script is like collaborating with the music, with the direction, with the editing. It's like everything is just a perfect formulation, you know what I mean? So yeah, it's one of my favorite movies of the year. It's my second favorite movie of the year. So
yeah, the way Nolan, kind of credit to, obviously a lot of credit to Ludwig, which we've been giving him credit for years on this channel, but the way Nolan incorporates, you're right, RB3, the score in all his movies has always been special, but this, especially in this movie, the way he does that with Ludwig's score, where a lot of the tension and a lot of the drama is in the music, where you just kind of feel whatever's happening just because of the score. They're like the mathematical equation, and the score is like, and you're like, oh, damn, this math equation, man.
Right, I'm enchanted. I want to
You're
learn, you
like,
know what I mean?
damn, they need to get this, man. And you don't even know what you're rooting for, but it's
Right.
still kind of in there because of the score. It's a crazy movie. It really is. How are you guys feeling about your 5 through 2 right now that you heard each other's? Good. All right, I gotta do mine because I have to go eventually. My top 5 movies of the year, 5 through 2. At number 5, I have May December, a
Oh wow,
film
five.
that, yeah, I love this movie. I really thought it was a powerful movie, and it had a lot to say about our current world and our current lifestyle, where we obsess over these people and then exploit them for our own benefit, and how we take these stories of exploitation, of abuse, of situations that are happening all over the country, specifically if we're talking about America, and instead of having some sort of sympathy or empathy, we exploit them for ourselves, or we exploit them for our own benefit. It has a lot of commentary, obviously, on that Hollywood mentality and social media mentality, but it also has a lot of commentary on the dynamics of age gaps and social dynamics and relationship dynamics that a lot of people try to ignore and try to justify in a lot of ways. And that final scene with Charles Melton's character talking to his wife, and where he says, like, maybe I wasn't old enough. And she kind of shoots him down really harshly. And you realize, like, oh, he's always been in this abusive relationship, and he just doesn't know any better and how to get out of it. I found it to be a very powerful movie. I really did not know what to expect, but it really did impact me. So that's why it's in my top 5. And number 4, I have How to Blow Up a Pipeline, a film that I saw recently, a neon film that is currently on Hulu. It literally is what it says. It's like the shortest movie I've seen all year, and it literally just takes you from A to B, which is how to blow up a pipeline, with little character vignettes into how to know each one of these characters. It teaches you about very little, but at the same time, just enough about what it is going on in the world as far as climate change and what is happening, and how extremist measures seem to be the most logical, where you start to think to yourself and say, hey, this is the only way people will listen, where sometimes awareness isn't enough. And sometimes that feeling that I think a lot of people are feeling right now, whether it is about climate change or whether it is about anything going on in the world or in this country, a lot of people are kind of tired about being told to wait and being told that if you just tweet about it, it's kind of cool or it's good enough. When in reality, sometimes there needs to be aggressive action. So I found it to be very interesting and very powerful in that sense. At number 3, I have the best anime movie of the year. It's the first Slam Dunk, a film that absolutely blew me away. The animation is absolutely insane. It's a combination of 2D and 3D, and it blends perfectly. And it's all about just story and tragedy and life and overcoming it, all inside a basketball game. And I was like, you got me, I'm in. I absolutely love basketball, and the way it was able to combine storytelling about families, about livelihood, and each one of the starting five have a story to tell. I thought that was a really cool way to incorporate the stories inside a basketball game, and how they're able to come back in the game and obviously come back in life as well with their character journey. So it's an amazing movie. I really highly recommend it. And then at number 2, I have Past Lives, a movie that absolutely shredded me as well, just like you guys, and left me heart-wrenched, as you would say, RB3, because it's absolutely beautiful, expertly directed, a lot of commentary, obviously, like you said, Sabrina, on what could have been, but also, like you said, RB3, on the immigrant story, which I really connected with, because I feel like a deep connection to Greta Lee's character inside this movie, this kind of youth mentality, as far as like you remember a little bit of the home country that you came from, but at the same time, you're incorporating yourself into America and you have ambition. You have a lot of ambitious ideas as far as what you can do in your life and what you want to do in your life and what you feel like you probably couldn't do in Korea, at least when you were younger. You probably could do in America. That's the whole idea. But at the same time, you feel like you lose part of yourself that you want back. You want to have that connection to your culture. So absolutely beautiful film. Truly one of the best of the year. It probably could have been my number one, to be honest, if it wasn't for One More. But yeah, how are you guys feeling?
Honestly, a lot of these are super cool. I love that we all have past lives so high. I think this is a great example of one of those films, kind of like an aftersun of last year, that every single person gets something out of it, no matter what. No matter what stage of life you're in, this will resonate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like everybody regrets something. So it's like that little bit of regret, like, yeah, what, like you mentioned, Sabrina, what could have been, like that little, like that thought of the one who got away, like it's always something that lingers in the back of people's minds, I feel like. So
whether it's like a person, if it's a friendship, or no matter what it is, I feel like we are always doubting ourselves in a lot of moments, big moments in our lives. And this is one of them. It's like someone comes from your past to say hello. And it's like all these feelings come back. Like all of us strangers too, in a way. Also, I'm laughing about the first slam dunk. This is right up your alley. Like the second I looked it up, I heard of this. I'm like, yeah, this would be on your top 10 list.
It's amazing. It really is.
I was gonna say about the first slam dunk. I remember your review for it, and your review on Geeks of Color was very passionate about it. Your review for the other anime that you put on previously, I don't want to mispronounce it. Suzumi. That one. The review for that one was really good on Geeks of Color too. But yeah, I knew you was hyped on this. I forgot that it was. I thought it was. I don't know why I didn't think it was like a movie. Is it? So it's a movie. It's a theatrical like movie. Like that was.
You could have actually seen it in theaters. Yeah, I went out and saw it in theaters too. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Dang, that's dope, man. I mean, I would have. Yeah, I love, you know me, man. We talked about Kuroko's basketball mad times. Like, I love that. I still haven't seen this movie, but. You know, I've seen that on number one of a lot of anime people's like list of the year. So like,
I'm telling you, if you guys look up reviews for this movie, man, like the New York Times was raving about it. They were like, "This is crazy! I've never seen anything like it." Like every single outlet was just going crazy about it. It really is. I think it was the best anime movie of the year, in an anime field that had a lot of great movies, obviously. But it's a beautiful movie. It really is about just what you take into these kind of sports and what you can accomplish in it. Obviously, the amount of emotion that players put inside the game is crazy. And if you keep up with sports and if you've kept up with sports for a while, you know about that, where it's not just about a touchdown or a three-point shot. It's about like, what did it take to get here? And everyone has a story. And basketball has always been, in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinion, the one that's the most open-faced approach, where there's no mask, literally. Mm-hmm. And it's just literally a chess game head-to-head, like the close-ups on people's faces you can get in basketball, like the Michael Jordan. If you saw the The Last Dance. That right there, bro. Like the Michael Jordan journey has always been about like, the eyes and just locking into a person's eyes, learning about their stories, hearing about their father, their mother, their brothers, whatever life they had to deal with. And that anime, create that with an anime background, it's just like, it's perfect. It absolutely is perfect. So I love it.
And I love to see May, December on your list too.
Yeah, did you guys like this movie? I felt like I was the only one.
I really, really liked it. Okay. Yeah, the performances were incredible. And like Charles Melton, oh my God.
He's great.
It was so crazy how Todd Haynes really towed the line of like comedy with such serious subject matter. Because like a line that sticks with me besides a lot of the heavier lines is like, I don't think we have too many hot dogs. And then so with little touches like that kind of almost like make something this difficult so palatable. And the fact that, again, as we're going through the story, we see the way he has been treated, not only by society and failed by society as a whole, but this woman, Julianne Moore. But then at the same time, it's allowed to happen again with Natalie Portman taking advantage of him as well. So it's just a failure on all accounts. So that's definitely something that stuck with me after this film.
Yeah, no, same. Again, if we could have made like a top 15, like I would have been really happy. You know what I mean? Like, 'cause yeah, this would have been for sure in that group. Like, this was right on the edge of. I mean, we could talk about honorable mentions now too. I mean, we'll talk about honorable mentions
Yeah, we
soon. But
will.
yeah, May December was definitely real, real close to making that list. Actually, that's we talked about a little bit before, but I did a whole Todd Haynes binge throughout this year, so I watched Velvet Underground. I watched the one that he did with that was kind of inspired by David Bowie. I can't remember off the top of my head. Watched Carol. Watched a lot of his films. But the one I was really moved by was his one he did with Julianne Moore called Safe, which is like her being in like this. It's almost very similar to May December in the fact that it's like about this. It's not very similar, but similar stylistically about like a woman. She's pretty like germophobic and she gets sick by like some chemicals in the air. So like some weird stuff starts happening around her. But it's similar stylistically to May December because the score is like over the top. You know, it's very quiet kind of situation and quiet dialogue, but very over the top like score and dramatic movements and stuff. So it's I love Todd Haynes, like one of the greatest filmmakers we got right now. I should have put this should have been on my list. If there wasn't so many great movies this year, this for sure would have been on my list. For sure.
The funny moment for me was the scene when they're in the mirror, in the bathroom mirror, and
Oh,
Julianne
yeah.
Moore is putting on her makeup,
Oh,
and
yeah.
it's they start getting like real close to each other, and you're like, what is this like sensual nature to the scene? And her giant lisp, she's like, have you always wanted to be an actor? And I was just like, oh. It just comes out of nowhere. You're like, are they about to kiss? And she just like breaks that tension with like the biggest, goofiest voice ever.
Todd Haynes was able to take this insane story, add in this melodrama in moments like that, and add that levity to characters that are the ones that are doing the wrong things. And then Charles Melton's character, he's able to toe that line and still give this space within that story. So yeah, that crazy one, that lisp, that.
Yeah, any movies you want to give a final shout out to before we hit our honorable mentions?
Sabrina, what was your you had a what was your number four?
Number four was Bottoms.
Oh yes, that's it. Yeah, Bottoms. Oh my gosh, like so funny. Another one that like was like a top like 12 or top 15. Like this would be there. But yeah, no, I love Bottoms. Like this, like you put me on the Bottoms, and I was like, yo, this is phenomenal. This is probably the funniest movie. Like to me, it's probably like the best comedy of the year. You know what I mean? Like I guess I put Barbie on the list because I think the cinematic achievement of it was really dope. But like, yeah, Bottoms was so funny, so many laughs, so good, so rewatchable. It's really really amazing. I'm happy to see that on your list.
Yeah, and again, sophomore feature, like knocked it out of the park. Have you seen it, Andres?
I haven't.
You have to watch it immediately.
Yeah.
Immediately, the
Is
second
there
that.
anywhere to watch it?
I
MGM Plus, I think. Ooh, I don't have that.
He has MGM Plus. No
I don't
concern.
know.
Yeah, I know. I think it's just available to rent right now, unless you have MGM Plus. But I'd really recommend it if you just need a good laugh, especially like. You're gonna sit there and watch In All of Us Strangers and Iron Claw Past Lives, and you need a palate cleanser. This is the perfect one. It is absolutely absurd, ridiculous. Rachel Sennett and Ayo Debrie, like great, great duo on this film.
Yeah, I feel like that's something we should do as well if we can, just to mention if there's anywhere to watch these movies. I think for most of them there is not, unfortunately. But if there is, I know mid-December, obviously Netflix. How to Blow Up a Pipeline is on Hulu. If anyone wants to see that, it's again really short. You can just check that out real fast. Super interesting. But I think we should just get to our honorable mentions. You guys ready? Let's do it. I'll start with you this time, RB3.
Yeah, I mean, so many honorable mentions. Again, like All of Us Strangers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 again was real close. Leave the World Behind was real close, real, real close. Bottoms, all of it. Did I already say All of Us Strangers? Did I already say that? I think I did. Aristotle and Dante's Discover the Secrets of the Universe. Phenomenal film right there too. And I think I said Guardians 3, May, December. And then for what a, oh, Iron Claw, Creed 3, for sure would have, for sure was the, would have been number 11. It was on my previous like version of my top 10 list. Talk to Me was phenomenal. One of the best horror movies, probably my favorite horror movie of the year. Yeah, it's too many good movies to list off, but those are just some of my honorable mentions.
Sabrina.
My number one honorable mention that I do want to say is Oppenheimer, just because it is not on my list, but it is a fantastic film. It's kind of like Anatomy of a Fall. I know objectively it should be on there. Also, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. That was a super rated, absolutely gorgeous, young, coming of age story. Rachel McAdams and Kathy Bates were incredible. Abby Ryder Fortson, so sweet. So I love that one. Spider-Verse as well. It is a stacked year, so it's so unfortunate that I had to leave a lot of these off. We have The Holdovers, How to Blow Up a Pipeline as well, Asteroid City, Beau Is Afraid, and Evil Dead Rise was my favorite horror movie of the year.
That's a good one. My honorable mentions are so goofy. The comedy of the year was unfortunately not Bottoms, Sabrina. It was John Wick Chapter 4. That was a comedy of the year. Absolutely amazing movie, both funny and just full of action. Again, so many hysterical moments in this movie. The scene where he falls down the stairs, I've never seen anything like that in a movie. Have you seen John Wick, Sabrina, Chapter 4?
Haven't.
Okay, it's incredible. Like, there's a scene where John Wick falls down the stairs for 15 minutes
No, it's the
straight, like
longest,
15
like,
minutes, and
yeah, it's
it
comedically
keeps
long.
going. It's so funny.
Seen it yet, but Hot Rod, when he's like running, he's like, I need to go to my quiet place, and he falls down a hill and he falls for a comedically long amount of time.
This is
I'm
that.
getting from John Wick, yeah.
It just keeps going and going, and then you're just like, all right, it's done, and it just keeps going. An incredible movie, absolutely beautiful. Shout out to Mr. Nobody, shout out to the dog, killing people. It's really cool.
Good dog representation in that.
It is Nimona, a Netflix animated movie that I got to review. Is a really heartfelt movie that I really enjoyed as well, starring Riz Ahmed and Chloe Grace Moretz, I believe. And then my final honorable mention, I had to do it. RB3 put me on this movie, and it's dope. Gran
Oh
Turismo.
yeah. Hey.
Yo, shout out David Harbour. Shout out Orlando Bloom. Shout out tall homie who can drive.
Yeah, that dude, Archie Madecki, like he's a dope actor. He's a dope actor. But David Harbour, like, he stole that movie. That's a good one. I forgot about that movie. That's a good
That's a
one.
great movie. It's a great
Yeah.
movie.
And the Gran Turismo is the one in Saltburn too.
That's
And he's
right.
in Saltburn too, so
I knew him from Midsommar. Midsommar. Yeah, that's where I recognized him. I was like, I've seen this dude. And then also a really heartfelt small role by I always mispronounce his name. Is it Jimon Hsu?
Jamin Hasu, I think.
Yeah, I always mispronounce his name, but Jimon Hsu or Jimon Hsu, from if you know him from Gladiator, from Guardians, and obviously now his incredible role in Rebel Moon, as the general. Shout out to him. He's an incredible actor. He talked a little bit about getting less roles, so I hopefully this movie and Rebel Moon will lead him to getting more roles. But those are my honorable mentions. Now to our number one movie of the year, Sabrina. Your number one movie of the year.
My number one is Priscilla by Sofia Coppola. I read the book right before watching the film. I had no connection to Elvis at all. I don't care about him. So hearing this story and seeing how young she was, like all of it was definitely really surprising to me, and the fact that It's something that's not really talked about when you talk about Elvis. I don't think it was super present in like Baz Luhrmann's film. Like there definitely wasn't a focus on the fact that he started dating Priscilla when she was like 14 years old. But anyways, to get into it, I think Sofia Coppola reflects the experience of girlhood, being like a young woman in this world in a way that is so subdued and very layered. Whereas a film like Blonde can exploit the subject, this one succeeds in not doing so and definitely adding a lot of nuance to all of this. Elvis is a larger than life presence in this film, played by Jacob Elordi. After this, I was like, I was not familiar with his game. He is fantastic. I only really saw him in like Euphoria or things like that, and this in Saltburn. He is a really great actor. I loved his performance as Elvis as much as I dislike Elvis. And he is larger than life in Priscilla's eyes. And Sofia Coppola, she shoots Graceland in a way that also kind of reflects the characterization of Elvis in this film. It's so large. She's in there alone. She's trapped for a lot of this. I feel like a lot of people can resonate when you're in any kind of controlling relationship, whether it's a friendship, romantic one, or again, a family one. That's kind of where I have my connection for this film, where there is just like a dominant presence looming over you at all times, and you kind of feel like you're walking on eggshells around this person. You feel like you can't be yourself around them. I think with this film, the production design was absolutely immaculate. I think the costume, makeup, and hairstyling was super top-notch. I cannot believe it wasn't nominated because her looks and outfits tell the story of this film, show this character's liberation, herself. And her life was full of people like viewing her from the outside, but her makeup was this like shield or facade. It's something as a person who didn't know that much about Priscilla, like I was familiar with all of her most popular looks that we see in this film. And it's just pretty crazy because there's a scene of her putting on lashes, makeup, doing her hair while she is in labor because she was just so afraid of letting her real self shine through that she had to put on this mask. And I think a lot of women can relate to that as well. And again, with the costuming, like as she starts to come into her own, she is defying Elvis's rules for how she can dress. And she's adding in patterns, she's adding in colors that he wasn't like allowing her to wear really. I just think those little touches, because there's no attention drawn to them in the film. It's just as you notice it, you're like, oh, like you see so much of her own personality finally start to come out. The performance by Kaylee Spaney was incredible. The fact that she was able to act so young and naive and then really take her power back towards the end of the film, I just think was phenomenal. And there was just, it felt like there was 10 years between what was going on, even though, of course, we know there wasn't. And again, like all Sofia Coppola films, there are just so many touches and details that are incredibly impactful and really elevate the story. So, as far as any type of biopic goes that focuses on women's struggles or anything like that, Sofia Coppola is a fantastic person to touch on that. And just to end it off, I hated Blonde. I hated Blonde so much. This is how you tell a story that can be like a little bit tragic without exploiting its subject. So, yeah.
I always think back to Anna, girl, you were great in Blonde.
And she was, but the film was.
Shout out to that song.
Was arguing.
RB3, your number one movie of the year.
My number one movie of the year is Origin, directed by Ava DuVernay. This to me is one of the most emotionally resonant movies I've ever seen. It's a, thought-provoking, it's moving, it's brilliantly acted and directed, and just something that just really challenges the narrative form in really interesting ways. The fact that it's telling the story, it's adapting the book of Cass, but it's adapting it by telling the story of the author who's writing it, like as she's writing it, while also incorporating the stories that are in the book. So interweaving a lot of anecdotes and historical periods and times, and it's just an epic, sprawling, globe-trotting journey that like has just everything that is that you want in an adult, you know, movie that makes you think. You know, I said in my review, like, there's a think piece with a capital THINK, and like for sure it's just pure like theoretical academia, like kind of speak or whatever about like race and race relations and like oppression and things like that, and the idea of caste. But the way they managed to convince, you know, me or any audiences who watched the movie, audiences who, you know, were surprised by a movie like I was when I saw it on like the Mystery Movie Monday or whatever, the way that is able to convince the audience of the argument that's being placed, the argument being that, you know, the Black struggle, the Black American struggle, the Jewish struggle during World War II and the Nazis and with the diet and the struggle of the dyads in India, how all of these systems of oppression and all these systems of caste are like interlinked. It just does a phenomenal job of making the argument and landing on the argument by the end of it. So, and yeah, and it's also just a really beautiful personal journey. Again, Anjanue Ellis-Taylor is probably my favorite performance of the year. John Bernthal's performance in this is phenomenal. Niecy Nash-Betts is also phenomenal. So it's like everybody who's in this film is great. Cinematography is great. It's just top notch all the way around. So I know, Andres, I know you wasn't rocking with it as much. We do have our review coming out, our spoiler review of Origin coming out pretty soon. I was moved by it. I really liked it. And I hope more people get to see it because it hasn't been as seen as it should be. But it's one of the most profound pieces of cinema I've seen in a long, long time.
Absolutely. Finally, my number one movie of the year. I think you guys have mentioned it already. But again, as you said, RB3 beforehand, it was my number one for a really long time. And I had to leave it up there just because I couldn't find anything else that really matched it for me. And that is Across the Spider-Verse. No other movie emotionally impacted me by the cinematic scale of what I was seeing, but also the emotional scale, the story structure, the ideas being presented to you, the fact that this was a superhero movie, but it featured so many artistic visions. And the visions all kind of came together. It was a really unique and powerful thing. As a lifetime fan of animation, I really did feel like this was a love letter to the medium in general, where all of animation is being thrown at you, where every single style, every single emotion is being portrayed in a manner that cannot be done in live action and is done way more effectively in animation. And it is a specific style that is good for all ages. And just because it is a medium that has been thought for a really long time to be for kids, doesn't mean it can't deliver the exact same or higher quality than any other movie I saw in 2023. So for that reason, Across the Spider-Verse is my number one movie of the year. I really did feel like this is the one movie that had a lot to say about knowing your place in the world and being told your place in the world and defying that and saying, I'm not gonna do that, and standing up against it, where you are told that this is where you're supposed to be and this is where you belong, when in reality, your background, your history, your family, everything that you've been told is making you different is what can make you better than everyone else inside this world. So I absolutely loved it. I really did feel like when Guillermo del Toro tweeted out, Across the Spider-Verse is here to heal your soul or something. Uh-huh. I'm like, I'm with it. That's exactly it. It's going to heal your soul.
Yeah.
Or whatever he said. There was like a specific line he said that I was like, bro, that's a bar. Yeah. It's my favorite movie of the year. I can't deny it.
Yeah. So. Hey, Guillermo del Toro, he retweeted my review too of it on
Yeah. I swear, what did he say? He said something so good. I was like, bro, he said something like heal your soul. I was like, bro, I feel that.
He loves it. I mean, I think anybody who genuinely loves the art form of animation can love Across the Spider-Verse like in so many different ways. I mean, it's a great animated film, but it's also just a great human story about being who you are and being proud of it, essentially. And just done in such an artsy way too. But it's also, I get, people who are a little bit, it's a Spider-Man movie, and I think that's why it doesn't get the same amount of seriousness in that conversation. But I think the to me personally, the filmmaking is like next. The filmmaking and the animation within the filmmaking is like next level. So.
Yeah, as much every Spider-Man iteration, whether it's like Tobey, Andrew, I think across or the Spider-Verse with Miles Morales, I think these are the best films, the best Spider-Man films we've ever had. I think it's literally mixed up there with Spider-Man 2. These are fantastic. I'm excited to see how the trilogy ends or part two, kind of, but yeah.
I guess it's a trilogy, yeah. If it's and then yeah, with the three, yeah.
Sabrina, Priscilla is something that's always been on your mind. You've been looking forward to this one forever, and it delivered for you. Were you disappointed that it didn't get more attention in awards?
Yeah, honestly, it's such a stacked year. I feel like we always have disappointments, but because there are also so many wins in a lot of ways with some other films in certain categories, I feel like I didn't focus on the losses as much. So it is really unfortunate that this didn't get anything. Because again, some of these technical ones, when it comes to production design, makeup, hairstyling, all of those, I really, really do think it deserved it at least. But yeah, I think this one was very, very low key. I feel like that happens with Sofia Coppola's films a lot. Like, I don't know if you guys have seen, they wouldn't give her the budget in this film to shoot a sequence in Los Angeles. So she had to take from her own Cartier commercial, she had to take sequences from that to put into Priscilla. And
Really?
yeah, and it's so crazy because one, Nepo baby, she's a Coppola. If she's going through these struggles, like where, how is that happening? It's absolutely insane. So it's not surprising. I feel like a lot of times Sofia Coppola's films aren't necessarily taken as seriously as some other people's. We saw that with The Virgin Suicides, even Lost in Translation, the kind of way it has aged. People don't really talk about her filmography a lot, which I feel like we've talked about it. We had a whole Meaning Up episode years ago about it. And so she has her specific style. I understand if you don't rock with it, it's not going to work. But again, I think throughout her entire filmography, the way she handles girlhood, the experience of being a young woman, I think is really unmatched, very unique to her style.
Yeah, I 100% agree, and I love Priscilla as well. That was such a good movie. I do like seeing the other side of the Elvis Presley tale. You know what I mean? And I just think, yeah, everything about it, the performance, like you said, it's very similar, not similar, but like how Cillian Murphy is like doing multiple years and like decades through his character, but you kind of see the age as he's like maturing through those years. I love that you can see that through Katie, through the lead performance in Priscilla as well. Like you could really see her like growing, maturing, aging, and becoming her own, while also being in this like tightly wound environment. The cinematography was really nice too. Like you mentioned, when she's like alone in the mansion and Elvis's mansion, it really did look like kind of like a painting with all the natural light just bursting through the windows, like really making it like a beam kind of like ghost beamy kind of ghost town type of feel. Yeah, it was brilliantly done all the way through and through.
The shot of her when they're in Los Angeles and Elvis is doing like a sermon for some young women that are really only there because he's Elvis. And he compliments one of the women's perfumes and kind of gets like a little flirty with her right in front of Priscilla. And the perfume he complimented was the perfume that she wears. So like he complimented on this random woman and she gets very emotional, gets up, goes to her room. The shot with like the light peeking through on her face. Oh my gosh. My favorite shot of 2023, 100%. Stunning.
Yeah, it's definitely one that I definitely want to check out for sure. Sabrina, have you seen Origin yet?
I have not, unfortunately. Yeah, that's one of those. So I have now a whole list of things. I have to watch the first Slam Dunk, Origin. Yeah, way too many good movies in 2023. It was like an embarrassment of riches, honestly.
Yeah, how are you feeling, RB3? Have you heard more about people talking about Origin?
No, not necessarily, but I mean that's okay. I know it's a movie that I can. Not, it's not a movie, for everybody. You know what I mean? Like I think people come away with it with different readings, or people might not be ready to be, given like a college thesis. You know what I
Oh,
mean?
history
Like it's
lesson, yeah.
yeah, history lesson in their movies. I get that, but at the same time, no, it is a brilliant piece of cinema, and I do hope it gets more attention, but that's why I put it in my that's why part of the reason why I put it in my number one, because I feel like it's amazing and brilliant and everybody should see it, but I hope I'm highlighting some attention to bring to it. Same I think I feel like with you too, Sabrina, like putting Priscilla, giving Priscilla that number one spot definitely hopefully inspires some people who are watching this to check it out, because I think those people should watch Priscilla. Like it's a really really good film. And I don't know where it was streaming at, but I do know like when I saw it in theaters, it was really, really like a great cinematic experience, especially like I said, like the cinematography, the music cues. Sofia Coppola with music and score is just always phenomenal. So yeah, I definitely think hopefully, that's on streaming. Hopefully Origin is on streaming. For Origin, Neon, I feel like they ain't got no money in the bank. Like I saw some report that they had a $14 million marketing budget for Ferrari, but then they cut it down to like 7 million, like right before the release. So it's like, dang, if they only had 7 million for the Adam Driver movie directed by Michael Mann, like how much do you think they're gonna have for Origin? So I don't know.
Crazy because we chatted a few weeks ago, and when you brought up Origin, RB3 is the first time I had ever heard of it at all. And I pay attention to this stuff. So for people who aren't painstakingly paying attention to every single release, they're definitely not going to hear about it. So I think it is really cool to shine that light on Origin, especially because that's another one that was completely shut out of the Oscars, like Priscilla. Again, it's a crazy year, it's a stacked year, but it's important to support some of our favorite creators, even if the marketing budget doesn't allow.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I'm happy Neon has the gut. I don't know. I was going to say something harsher, but has the heart to like make these movies. But it's always kind of disappointing that we don't really hear about quite a few of them, if I'm being honest. I
Have up a
swear,
pipeline. You have
I
to look
think
for
I heard
that.
that from you, Sabrina. I'd never heard about this movie. And then I just saw it recently. And I was like, I would have never seen this movie. And I never saw a trailer. I never saw a poster. Nothing. I think I heard that from, I think you mentioned that in our text chain one time. And then obviously now Origin, RB3, you heard that from RB3. It's kind of weird how those are two Neon films. And they're both. There was a major Neon release though, right? This, what was the major one? The one that
Ferrari.
got a lot of awards. No, there was another one.
Oh,
Wasn't
Anatomy
there?
of a Fall. Anatomy of a Fall. Yeah.
Anatomy of a Fall. Okay.
Awards, but
That's Neon, right? Okay. So that's probably the one they were focusing on the most. 'Cause even Ferrari, like that was in theaters for like a week.
crazy.
I
And
don't think a lot of people saw that.
no, yeah, and like Searchlight, I think, is another studio, since we're calling out studios here.
Yeah.
They had All of Us Strangers, they had Sanctuary, I believe. If not, Hulu had it. Sanctuary is another one where, yes, this is a very out there concept, but I feel like a lot of people haven't even heard about its existence. I found out about that through a coworker. So I think word of mouth and maybe social media and people tweeting out their reactions to films have definitely encouraged some other people to check out films that they may not have heard of. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I think Poor
hopefully.
Things was also like Searchlight as well.
I think they did good with that one. I
Yeah.
think it's probably what they put a lot of their money behind. But then we see some of these other films for certain studios kind of falling to the wayside because of it. Same thing with like Ironclaw. Before, they are like the reigning Best Picture winner, and they're not even putting the support behind Ironclaw that I think they should have, because I definitely think it needed to be in maybe screenplay, Zac Efron.
What was their big one to this year? A24.
Past Lives?
Oh yeah, that's probably their big one. Yeah,
Yeah,
you're
I
right.
think maybe Past Lives, yeah. But
That's
still,
A24.
But it's just it's like it's I hate that we always have to be like, oh, what's the one that, we're
The
gonna
one they
choose?
pick,
Like, I'm like,
yeah.
man, can it just makes you kind of sad. Like, can it just be based on merit? Can it just be based on people seeing it? But then again, it's like, I don't know. Sometimes it works out. Like, we had Andrea Riseborough's, she snuck in with her like nomination through a guerrilla campaign. I think people are trying guerrilla campaigns now, but it's like, with cinema, like, people need to see these movies, and yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
It's hard because we've had a conversation for the past, I don't know, forever. I want to say 6, 7 years about streaming and independent movies and like awards movies and how like I've been hypercritical of like putting these movies on Netflix and just letting it die there. But in a sense, I feel like that's better than not seeing them at all and just it being buried, maybe seeing a weak run in theaters and then it never pop up again. I feel like that might be even worse. So it's a difficult balance. It's really difficult. Yeah.
Say a lot of my favorites, besides, of course, like the Barbies of it all. I don't think there's really any in my top 10 that are easily accessible on streaming right now,
No.
which is very unfortunate.
Yeah, the anime ones for me are always tough. I know it's hard for people to see those movies. Obviously, I always recommend them and I hope people can watch them. But I do understand if people are like, where? Where can I see these movies? I think you can see Suzume in Crunchyroll. I think it's on Crunchyroll. I don't think First Slam Dunk is on there yet, though. But you can see that one. I think it's been up there for a little bit. So
Yeah.
let's run through our top 10, 10 through 1 real quick, and then we can wrap it up. Sabrina, give us your top 10 movies of the year, 10 through 1.
Number 10, Anatomy of a Fall. Number 9, Sanctuary. Number 8, Rye Lane. Number 7, All of Us Strangers. Number 6, Iron Claw. Number 5, Barbie. 4, Bottoms. 3, Past Lives. 2, Poor Things. And number 1 is Priscilla.
RB3, your top 10 of the year.
Number 10 for me is Anatomy of a Fall. Number 9, The Boy and the Heron. I'm surprised that wasn't on your list, Andres.
What's up with that?
Yeah, you like Boy and the Heron?
I thought it was cool, man. I thought it was cool.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. All right. All right. All right. I you don't like the RC, you don't like Miyazaki, I get it. Number no, I'm just kidding. Number 8 is Holdovers. Sorry. Number 7 is 1001. Number 6 is Barbie. Number 5 is Past Lives. Number 4 is Across the Spider-Verse. Number 3 is Poor Things. Number 2 is Oppenheimer. And number 1 is Origin.
Awesome. My top 10 movies of the year. At number 10, I have Godzilla Minus One. At number 9, I have Creed 3. At number 8, I have Oppenheimer. At number 7, I have Suzume. At number 6, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. At number 5, I have May December. At number 4, How to Blow Up a Pipeline. At number 3, The First Slam Dunk. Number 2, Past Lives. And number 1, Across the Spider-Verse are my top 10 movies of the year. How are you guys feeling?
I love these. I love that we share some, but also our lists are very different. I feel like this happens every year.
It
Yeah.
does.
No, I
Yeah.
gotta I want to check out First Slam Dunk. What was that one you called? Sanctuary, Sabrina?
You guys have to watch Sanctuary. Trust me, it's a vibe.
I
Okay,
want to
I'll check
see Poor Things.
Yes.
I want to see Priscilla. And I want to see, what was another one you guys had that I'm like, all right, I need to see it.
Rylan.
Rye Lane. Okay, I'll see that.
Anatomy of a Fall.
Wonderful.
No Killers of the Flower Moon for any of us. That's tough.
Love Lily Gladstone.
Right,
Yeah.
right, right. Now I feel that. I feel that.
Yeah.
Same. But yeah.
Alrighty, guys. Those were our top 10 movies of 2023. Let us know what is your top 10 in the comments down below. Let us know what you thought of our list as well. What are you going to check out that you probably wouldn't have heard of before? Let us know that in the comments down below as well. You could follow us at First Cut TMO, and you could follow me at Squad Leader Ace and Sabrina.
Follow me on Twitter and TikTok at Sabrina on Film, and then Instagram at Sabrina X Monica.
RB3.
And follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Director RB3.
Either way, guys, for the First Cut crew, we're going to be peacing out, so peace, deuces.
even